Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Radio Linguistica dedicated to audiovisual translation. You may ask, is this a special topic different from other sorts of translation? Well, let's see. I personally was raised from my metaphysical deep sleep, to put it in Kant's terms, on naivety as a child, when I came to my Dutch relatives and saw the same serial with the same heroes, not speaking German anymore, even not Dutch, but English with subtitles. So I was suddenly confronted with two fundamental types of audiovisual translation, dubbing and subtitles. Before, of course, I never had asked the question why the American heroes were speaking perfect German. Of course, then I didn't reflect on the enormous work behind the stage for dubbing and subtitling. And some people may still think that it's just about pressing the button on their remote control and they have the subtitles. But let's have a look behind the stage with a specialist in the field. I welcome here Dr. Emilia Perez from Nitra in Slovakia. Good afternoon, Emilia.
Good afternoon, Konrad, and thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Emilia is also member of the board of the European Master in Translation. We'll come back to that later. But first of all, Emilia, what is this audiovisual translation, its main features and challenges?
Well, it's a very good question, Konrad, because I like the introduction you made, because probably what you didn't realize back then when you really thought that those cowboys are talking and speaking in great German is that you probably witnessed very good dubbing and very good dubbing translation, because that's what we say it is when a viewer doesn't notice. But generally speaking, we could say that audiovisual translation is basically a transfer of verbal components from one language to another. What is specific when we talk about audiovisual translation is that for a translator, we are not only translating maybe the words or what was being said, but basically the whole group of meanings which is there in the film. Because what is being said, or maybe what is being written on the screen, doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter, but it is very specific when you connect it with the other meanings which you can hear and which you can see. So this is what makes audiovisual translation maybe different from other types, and what are the main challenges, that the things which are said can bear different meanings based on the elements from maybe layer of sound or the video. So in audiovisual translation, we are transferring all of these meanings. Normally, or mainly, we talk about transferring them to different language and to different culture, but there are also many other types. So it's very exciting field, and whether we talk mainly about dubbing or mainly about subtitling, there are many specifics and many challenges related to how we watch films or audiovisual content, how we perceive such content, how we think about it, and this is why I really fell in love with this area and why I'm very passionate about it, also in my research, also in training, but also as a practitioner.
Let's start with subtitling. Well, as I told, some people are naive and think they just press the button and they have the subtitles. Today, you can have them normally in television, but actually it's an art. And what are the specific challenges and specific features of subtitling?
Well, if I will talk about interlingual subtitling, so the subtitling when we translate from one language to another, it is a very specific task. And I can see that every time I start the training with my students who are new to the area, because basically subtitling might seem that you translate what was said in the film, and you put it into two lines and that's it, it's on the screen. And then, yes, as you said, someone will just press the button and it's going to appear there. But it's much more complicated than that. because one of the very basic and the most essential rules for subtitling is that we are trying to transfer all of the meanings in a space and time which is rather limited. We know how many characters which we can use, depends where the subtitles are going to be screened with, and where the film is going to be screened, but we know how much time we have, we know how many characters we can use. And if you imagine some type of audiovisual work where the main character will just speak very quickly and be very expressive, you know, the amount of characters you have per line is the same. And basically the art of subtitling lies in the ability to use the limited space, but not to lose meanings we have. So what subtitlers very often face is that we are, of course, trying to translate, but we are trying to find the right words so that the viewer who is watching the film with subtitles has enough time to read the subtitles. It's comfortable, it's not annoying, you know, because sometimes there are these layman debates very often in Slovakia, especially that, and you know, they said this word in a film and it wasn't in the subtitle. But sometimes it's just not possible, because in subtitling it's not important to have every single word there in these two lines, because sometimes it's just not possible. It's important to transfer all of the meanings. So for me, the art of subtitling is about playing with words and looking for ways how to maybe say the same thing, maybe in fewer words, lesser words, smaller extent. But also subtitling is a lot about how we interpret the film. Because if you have to look for this meaning, you have to be very careful about this. And then there is a technical side, which is becoming very important now. So this task is also very complex. You know, in past, the translators of subtitles, at least in this region, would do the task on the paper, and then technician would come and decide about all of the other things. But the reality is completely different today. The person who is working on subtitles is doing so many things, you know, spotting them, correcting them. Depends if it's not television. If you go to film festival, you might do even more. Sometimes it really relate to changing all of the formats and all of the other special requirements a client in this case could have. So it is very challenging task, but very exciting. I think the most challenging, because you ask about the main challenging, is really the basic criteria which is being discussed from 1980s, the space and the time we have to transfer the meanings. Because sometimes this is not a problem, but very often it is. And it takes quite a lot of training, but especially quite a lot of talent to do this and to do it in a adequate way.
So a translator of subtitles, he has the text, but he has also the film to see if the action is going on very quickly. So he has to shorten the text, I suppose.
Yes. In ideal case, definitely, because you want the subtitles be there when the sentence is just being said in the original language, because one thing is the language, but all of the other meanings, how the character, I don't know, uses the face expression, whatever is happening in the scene is related to the very sentence. So you have to be very accurate with this. So again, what you hear and what you see in the film is basically crucial, because if you just focus on the text, it might not work well in the end. But also there are very special moments. You can have a film which is very rich in terms of the meanings on the visual layer. So if you imagine, I don't know, a crazy action movie when something is, you know, exploding on the screen and a car explodes and then someone jumps through the fire in the other corner of the screen. If you think about the viewer as a subtitler, then you know that the subtitler is not probably going to be looking at the bottom of the screen and waiting for the subtitles to come up. You know, the attention is going to be all over the screen. And that's where you, again, if you are, you know, sensitive to these aspects, then you should know how much text you should involve and how to involve it again so that it's comfortable. Because what I say to my students, although this is very simplified because we deal with this for over a year, but what I always say to my students is that if you prepare good subtitles, then the viewer is actually not really noticing them. The viewer will look there and the viewer is going to be looking for meanings, but watching film with subtitles shouldn't be about just reading the subtitles. It should be about watching the film, and when you need, you will glance at the subtitles, you will get the meanings, and then you enjoy the film. But it really shouldn't be. Sometimes we see this in the cinema, that you have the subtitles from one corner of the screen to the very other corner, and sometimes I'm laughing, especially it happens in our country, especially that you have the viewers like on tennis match because they are trying to follow the text, but that's not what they should be doing. They should be enjoying the film and they should be remembering maybe all of the possible details about the characters. So the art of subtitling takes to learn how to take all of these aspects into consideration, and technology makes some of that easier. I think especially now, but I think we should remember the very basics as well, because sometimes the technology can take us too far away from the essentials, but of course it helps.
Well, let's speak also about dubbing, because this is another other fundamental part of audiovisual translation. How is it made?
Well, the strategies differ a little bit in countries, but for example, Slovakia is traditionally a dubbing country, so we have strong dubbing tradition, as well as in Czech Republic and Spain and Italy and so on and so forth. Again, for our region, the way how dubbing is done has changed a bit, because what it was in past was that you would have a person who would work on translation of the dialogues, and then you would have another person, especially in Czechoslovakia, who would be seen as the artist, and that was the person who was working on editing the dialogue. So that means that me as a translator, I would be asked, and if I say in past, I mean here, I really mean just 10 years ago, I'm not talking about a long time ago. So you would be, or I would be asked to work on translation, which is maybe clear, which is not too artistic, but which is very strict and direct in meanings. Mm-hmm. I would be asked, like, maybe if there are some word puns, can you provide us with more options? And then the editor of dialogues would come and they would look at the way, ways how to create the illusion, which you actually mentioned at the very beginning of this interview, that the American actor is using his mouth to produce words in German or in Slovak. And there are many tricks how to do this. But what we see now in practice is, at least in our region, that the two professions, which were two separate professions in past, merged into one. So now as a translator for dubbing translation, you are actually creating the script for how these dialogues are going to be recorded, let's say in Slovak or in German. So one thing is translation, but what is very important is trying to achieve this illusion of you know, basically tricking the viewer into believing that the character is speaking, you know, whichever language. And the tricks which are there, actually, once you get familiar with them, it becomes a routine and it's not so difficult. But in the beginning, it's it's very demanding. So what is also very important is that, of course, you want to get the right meaning of what is being said. Again, this needs to be in some sort of congruence with what is happening on the screen, also with facial expressions of the actor. So the audio is still important. Although we are changing the audio, especially in lip sync, we are changing the audio for another audio. But for you as translator, it is important because you want to hear, you know, what was said in between the lines, especially and how it was portrayed with the words. So what a translator does then is that we are looking for two basic types of synchrony, and this is what creates the illusion. The first type is the quantitative synchrony. So you are looking at lengths of the words, at amount of syllables. Of course, it depends whether the character is on picture or whether, you know, the character would just not be seen, because this changes the situation a bit. And then you are looking at the so-called qualitative synchrony. So basically, we are working with the movements of mouth, and we are looking for words in the target language which appear similar. And for students, for example, translators who are graduates from linguistic programs, this is very easy because they'll see what was the point of their lessons of phonetics and phonology, and they can use it because actually that's where they understand that there are groups of words, there are groups of sounds, vowels, consonants, which look the same when you pronounce them. Another part of this is because, as I said, you are not creating the translation, and I always tell to my students that they are creating the script, how it is going to be recorded, that there is quite a big focus on this in Slovakia, is that also we provide instructions for actors. This is said ironically. This is said with this and that tone of voice. We have special short words how to do it, and there is very specific formal structure. So really, the actors can just come, look at it, and you know they can start performing.
Oh, so the actor get some instructions on the script.
The actor doesn't see just the sentence and the time codes or the sentence in Slovak translation, but for example, what we mark is the time when the actor should start speaking. If there is some special, let's say, tone of the voice or something is said with a shaky voice, we have to put this as instruction for the actor, because first it speeds up the process, otherwise the actor would have to, you know, try to do this a few times. But you are actually saying in this sentence, you have to be very careful, because this was actually, maybe you are saying you are the best friend ever. But if you add instruction ironically, it changes the meaning. Also, what we add are, for example, pauses, because if there is a pause which bears meaning, then, you know, we have to again tell the actor, like, okay, here you have to make longer pause. And we have, in Slovakia, we have special, you know, characters for it. This varies a bit throughout the countries. Also, we notify the actor that this is going to be said, but the lips of the actors are not seen on the screen. Again, we have some abbreviations for that. So we are actually providing many instructions for the actors, but also for the whole creative team, because this is very specific in dubbing, and it's more specific, it's different than in subtitling, that nowadays in subtitling you're usually more or less doing the final work. There is a team who checks the subtitles after you, and they check the formal side, but in dubbing you are just preparing a material, and the whole creative team is just going to work with it. So actually you are not really finalizing the product, I don't like the word, but that's what we use today. But you are really creating screenplay for everyone involved, because you notify also the director, like, there are going to be some songs, there is going to be some subtitle, because we also have to reflect that maybe there is some text on the screen, so you include this into your material. All of the things basically which have to be reflected. So first on the level of voice, and voice doesn't mean just words, because we also put information about whether the person is laughing, coughing, whatever, because if I would even sneeze now, and if you sneeze, it's going to sound different because we use the voice. So this is another thing. Plus all of the other elements the creative team after the translator should be informed about, that there is some writing, how it should be translated, that there are some songs. Songs are the most difficult for me always. That's that's the biggest challenge. So it is very creative job as well. But I think once a translator gets into the habit and understands what is important, because I think normally we translators are focused mainly at the words, and that's completely natural. But I think whether in subtitling and even more in dubbing, we have to be very much aware of the whole film, let's say, but also of the whole process. So we have to understand how creation of dubbing as such works, and then we're going to do a good job, hopefully.
Well, let's resume a little bit the audiovisual translation in general. It's, as I see, it's a little bit a mixture of translation and interpreting. So there are features of translation. So how would you justify to make audiovisual translation a special branch of translation?
Oh, well, there are many, many well-known researchers who did this, and they would be able to do it better than me. So I'll just, conclude it in simple words. From scientific point of view, of course, there was a lot of research done which showed many specifics. And speaking from this perspective, actually, it even seems that the things we need to research, but we need to research so that we are able to improve our work as translators or the work of future translators, actually got beyond translation. And this is what is specific, because what we need to understand and what we are trying to understand, and there are many interesting projects made on this aspect, is how does our mind work when we are watching a film which is dubbed? Mm-hmm. How does our mind work when we are watching a film which is subtitled? So there is a lot of area we are looking at from the point of view of reception. And I think this is slightly beyond what maybe we are mainly focusing on in translation studies. But translation studies as a discipline is also going far beyond what the limits used to be. So I wouldn't like to get into this. But from practical point of view, it indeed is specific, because what we see is that that really, without understanding the multimodal character of a film, without understanding and working with elements from the level of sound and from the level of the image, this translation just wouldn't work. This translation would just actually, if we were working with words, as maybe if we made a comparison with literary translation, which is also extremely, of course, creative, and there are many challenges. But here, the text is just one of the parts we are working with, and then there are other two. So I think this is the most distinctive part. And there are many, many others we could talk about, but I don't want to take your audience for the whole weekend.
Well, we come back to this still. As I said in the beginning, you are a member of the board of the European Master of Translation, and there is a special working group of audiovisual translation. What is the aim of this working group?
Well, this is one of the newer groups we have in the EMT network. And actually, there are many very good programs in the EMT networks who are focusing a lot on audiovisual translation, but also at the area of media accessibility, which is related. We will get to this maybe later. So our idea was that we should probably try to find ways how to maybe use the potential this amazing network provides and offers, and maybe help each other to improve the strategies for training that are implied in our countries. Because, of course, in the whole EMT network, we have programs who have long tradition in audiovisual translation. We have programs which specialize mainly in audiovisual translation. We have programs which do not offer it at all, but they would like to start. So the idea of this group was to create a group of trainers interested in AVT, of course, of various expertise, and we are sharing a lot of knowledge, but useful tips. We are working on many things together, and we are actually trying to help each other in finding ways how to improve the training we provide. Because the main specific of this discipline, when we look at it from from the university perspective, but not only, but the perspective in training, is that it evolves so dynamically. It's so fast. Sometimes I see that I say something to my students, and then 5 years ago, 5 years after that, it's just not true anymore because it changed. So it's actually very difficult for universities to keep up, and for us as trainers, and this group is helping us in doing that. And I think it's a potential that all of our members actually value. At least I hope they do. I have the feeling they do, because we are a very active group and we are preparing many activities together. So we are looking at selected areas of AVT, also in research, also in training. We are looking at new trends in practice, so that we can help to shape maybe the future of the profession in a way that it really works with translators who are prepared for all of its specifics.
So one action is already this Friday, 4th of June. You will have a sort of summer school. Well, summer hasn't come yet, but you will call it like this, about audiovisual translating. So what is the target group? Is it also interesting for translators to listen to this?
Yes. Well, we create this event mainly for trainers, but not only university trainers. So I think it can be beneficial for whoever trains translators and would like to train them for audiovisual translation in academia, but also in commercial sphere. And we will introduce all of the trends, but also some useful tips and tricks for people who are in training, because I think this is very important. And the good thing is that this will be series of events which we want to work on also in the following years. But I think it can be interesting also maybe for practitioners or for people who would just like to get more insight into audiovisual translation, especially the first section of the event in the morning. We have keynote speeches by two great speakers, by Jorge Diaz-Sintas, who is the absolute superstar of audiovisual translation. And he will actually speak about the newest trends in industry and its needs. Then he will connect this with also what universities can do. But I think this is going to be quite solid lecture, which will provide like full picture of what are the current tendencies we see. And the other great speaker is Elena Di Giovanni from University of Macerata, who is focusing on media accessibility, and she will speak a lot about those type of transfer where we can provide the content to audiences with special needs. And I think this will be also very interesting for whoever is interested in this area. So in case some of the listeners would like to join us, you can still register. The event is online. It's for free. All you need to do is to register, and we will be very happy to welcome you. You can maybe look at the website of our department, Department of Translation Studies of Constantine the Philosopher University in Nitra, but I also provided Konrad with the link, and you can find it everywhere online, because we made sure the news will reach everyone who could be interested. But if someone wants to attend, we will be the most happy to welcome you at our event.
So if you want to deepen your knowledge about audiovisual translation, please register. We will publish the link, of course, and because unfortunately we are already close to the end of our broadcast today. So last question is about accessibility, because you said it's one of the key terms in your summer school as well. Recently we had the Radio Linguistica broadcast on easy language, which barrier-free language. So perhaps you can talk very shortly about the links between both.
Yeah, well, accessibility, actually, just maybe to briefly explain, was always portrayed a bit in audiovisual translation, because we are not thinking only about two languages, but about transfer of the meanings in the broadest sense. So very often we approach audiovisual translation also when we were talking about subtitles for deaf and hard of hearing or creating audio description for the blind. But the area of accessibility or media accessibility is growing. And what we see now is more or less that if you think that accessibility, but actually this is not so new, because it was already said by Yves Gambier, I think, in 2006. If accessibility in this context means creating access for everyone, it means for everyone. And language accessibility, so basically what we normally call audiovisual translation, is also just one of the types of how we create access. So I think accessibility is becoming a term and a bigger concept where we see that accessibility is not anymore about helping someone who has some issues, because this brings many implications which are problematic. But accessibility should be a general idea when we think that if I create a content, everyone should have access to it. And it means that there shouldn't be linguistic barriers, there shouldn't be sensory barriers, there shouldn't be maybe some cognitive barriers. So accessibility is actually very much linked to audiovisual translation, and what we see, and what was also explicitly pointed out by many colleagues who are interested in this area, is that actually accessibility is becoming more comprehensive term because it means access in the broadest sense. And I think it's very important that it is maybe going in this way because it also helps to change maybe some of the procedures which were there, you know, for decades something was done in this and that way, but maybe it's time to be more accessible and really to make sure that we are somehow bridging maybe the differences or the barriers which were created in past. So you said briefly, so I was trying to be brief. I know it wasn't so short, but
well, thank you very much. We are already at the end. Unfortunately, just for curiosity, in Slovakia, are Czech films dubbed or subtitles, or Slovak in Czechia? What's about that?
Well, it's very big topic, but basically what we do is that in Slovakia we don't dub or subtitle Czech films. There were some attempts saying that maybe something needs to be subtitled, but this is very interesting aspect, because when we bring in the Czech films to Slovakia, we actually don't localize them. But in most of the cases, when Slovak content is being brought to Czech Republic, it is being localized, so it's being. For example, the films are being dubbed from Slovak to Czech very often. But it is, very complex thing, because one thing is that the languages are similar, but you have the same case in many other countries. The other thing is that there really was a long joint history. And also there is a bit of cultural powers element that, you know, are in a way reflected in how some of the procedures still work, but of course for me I can say that for me to see a Czech film dubbed into Slovak would be very annoying, and it doesn't make sense. So we don't dub, but it's interesting that when it happens the other way around, it's different.
Thank you very much. I wish you good luck for your summer school, and once more, thank you very much for this interesting information.
Thank you very much, and a wonderful afternoon to all of you, and have a great weekend.